This is Rafflebix After Hours.
Welcome everybody to Rack Addicts After Hours, episode 44. My, we've come a long way. We are joined today by Pete, Luke, and once again back with us through the magic of the internet, it's Telmo, everybody. Our jazzy man has returned. How are you, Telmo man?
I'm very good. How are you, Ben?
Very, very well. All the better for seeing your wonderful face over the power of the internet.
Oh, you're too kind. I
How
miss you too.
How have you been? Catch us up on the many weeks.
Yeah, I've been busy. I've been obviously, you know, university started, so there's this whole sort of like regulations and the sort of new ways of methods of learning.
Are you going places for this universitying?
I am going on Wednesdays. I've got a day full with lectures. Well, they all try to condense it into one big space. The major lectures, so let's say ensemble and composition, the ones that we actually need to be present. So they involve a little bit of human interaction, let's say. I've been doing that on Wednesdays, and then the other days I've just been staying at home. But I've been doing the lectures online via Zoom, which I became a Zoom Jedi Master.
You know all the tricks.
I know all the tricks, yeah. I've been just studying, and then I've started teaching as well. So now I think I've told you guys this about maybe 10 episodes or 15 episodes ago. I was going to start teaching. And there we go. I'm also doing piano teaching now, which is quite interesting as it's not my main instrument. So I've been just thinking about how can I add to this person's life. We're not through my technique, but
using your musical powers.
Yeah, I mean, because I compose on the piano. I'm pretty sure that you guys feel with me on this one. But you know, you don't need to necessarily be proficient at an instrument to be able to come up with musical stuff out of it.
But sometimes that's part of the fun, is picking up an alien instrument and seeing what on earth is going to happen.
Exactly. So yeah, not being my main instrument, but I compose in it, so I think I'm more than capable to teaching, and it's going really well so far. So I've been doing that. I've also been keep on working on PJIP's music. We've got the masters off from Andy, so it's now ready to be released.
Ooh, exciting stuff.
So yeah, we still don't have a date yet, but we are working on all the marketing business. What else have I been doing? Oh, you guys can see from the screen. I've got these two panels there. You can't really tell a massive difference from this perspective, but it does make a big difference, these two little beautiful panels in this room.
Fancy looking acoustic treatment there.
Yeah. Well, it needs to be girlfriend friendly.
Of course. Needs to pass, so, cut the mustard for the interior designer of your household.
No, she's great. What else did I do? Sold a guitar, which is going away. This one, another one shall come back at some point. I mean, miss you guys.
Oh, we miss you too, tell me. Why have you forsaken us for so long?
I'm back. I'm just glad that I'm kind of like got my life back in place now, so I can kind of start a new routine back over.
Well, we're looking forward to having you around, and more, well, hopefully a new segment which may well have quite a jazzy jingle. We'll Ooh. See when that gets deployed soon.
Gracias.
Luke's with us as well. Luke, how have you been?
I'm good, Ben, thank you. I've been busy doing pretty much nothing this week. I have had a lot of work on.
It's the best kind of busy, isn't it? Busy, just kind of busy doing nothing.
Yeah. My new job is great, but it's kind of like, it's just taken some of my brain power, which I don't mind at all. It's good to have something that's, you know, actually taking some of my...
power by JML.
For a large part of it, actually, I've been playing a huge amount of No Man's Sky, actually. which is a game that I didn't know there was a huge spotted and sorted history to it.
Oh, it's did you not that... know about the no. how it was at release? I was vaguely aware, but I heard the rumblings as
that,
people
that
were
little
very
game
angry.
Where the physics are really nice, and that like he's like jumping around and stuff. Is that No Man's Sky?
No, it's a procedurally generated space simulator thing.
I'm so bad at games. Apologies.
Oh man, it's great. The thing is, it's like when it was launched, all the advertising, all the marketing was very much focused on how much you're going to be able to do. It's seamless. You can jump in a ship and just break atmosphere, fly out into the system, and then you can just engage a warp drive, go somewhere else, enter an atmosphere, land, harvest things, fight things, all sorts. And it's the sort of thing where lots of games have tried to do that, but they're riddled with loading screens or some part of it is awful. And just kind of there for the look, for the point of being there. But No Man's Sky was always going to be this big, you can do it all at once without any bumps, lumps, or
limitless possibilities.
And obviously everything's going to be very pretty because it's all procedurally generated and it has this really unique kind of cartoon aesthetic. Except when it launched, it had barely any of that functionality. It wasn't even really multiplayer, which was their big selling point. But over the months since its release, the developers basically went back into the studio and just... rather than communicating or doing returns or anything, yeah, they just literally just went back to the code and just built the game they were supposed to release, which has been sort of delivered over the course of various expansion packs and updates. So some friends of mine and I have been spending a lot of time pointing our laser beams at rocks and using them to build ships, and it's been quite fun. That's pretty much me, to be honest.
Nice one. I remember when it was first out, the multiplayer aspect was that theoretically it was possible that you could encounter another player, but it's because the sort of the playable galaxy or something was so big, it was practically never going to happen. I think that's how it was.
But then some people found the same planet, traveled to the same named system, stood in the same spot, lined up their screens while they were both... you know, logged into Xbox Live, and they were like, "Ah, we can't see each other." So yeah, it was this big thing
Inception.
Where one of many massive complaints that sort of rocked the game's release. But now it's fully compatible, and you can join up with teams and do these big missions and stuff. It's great. Yeah,
nice one. I remember it when it was sort of first announced. It had a similar kind of scope to it. To Star Citizen in terms of its feel, where it's like, oh, it's going to be massive and all these promises, but it actually sort of it has finally had an end to its cycle rather than Star Citizen, which feels like it's going to be one of those projects that's going on for 30 years and is never finished and never really gets released in any way.
Yeah, like Nuclear Fusion, right? It's always 20 years away.
Yeah.
Yeah, who knows? I mean, Star Citizen looks great, but I think the thing that really killed No Man's Sky when it started was that it was £62,
and it just wasn't finished.
$62 or whatever, and yeah, it was barely an indie game when it launched. But obviously, yeah, it's now free on Game Pass, so I don't mind.
Yeah, of course. Nice one. What have you been chewing on, Pete?
Basically, I thought I'd... because of what the listeners won't know is that I had a bit of a debacle with my audio before we recorded episode 43, which is I was having a tussle with my RME Total Mix, which is the virtual mixer app for my audio
interface.
Sounds like
a DJ from Yugoslavia.
What, Total Mix?
RME Total Mix.
Yes. I suppose you could frame it like that. Anyway, so it been fully functional last time we did a remote record session and had not been problematic. And then suddenly I could not hear myself. Tried to do remedial action on the fly, which turned into a massive hot mess. And as I said earlier, you guys were very patient with me, and I spent I think it was up to an hour faffing around.
We were just chatting about whiskey and things, I think.
Yeah, but eventually got there, and so this week I thought I would try and nail it. So I've been watching countless videos to try and work out how it all works. I'm very lazy in that respect. I mean, I've basically got a Fireface 800, and I've had it for about 6 years now.
Yeah,
and it basically just works.
How many inputs is it?
It's 18. Well, it's 48 in total. Mm-hmm. Because you've got all the ADATs and all the other various digital ways of connecting. But you've got 10 analogs in total.
Okay.
And you've got four with preamps in the front so that you can stick mics in, and then the rest are all line inputs in the back. Some of the front ones can be rerouted to the back just for line. So you've got an option. So you can have... But two of them, I think it's 9 and 10, are actually only on the front, and they're dedicated to the front panel. As I say, the rest are at the back. Anyway, so I've watched countless videos on the product and tried to get my hand around. I do seem to have a particular problem with complicated audio interfaces when it gets into the sort of how the routing works. The videos seem all very straightforward, and these are mostly videos from RME themselves, and they describe how that you set up the routing. But unfortunately, it seems to be a slightly newer version. I've got the latest version that's compatible with my Fireface 800, but they seem to be sort of working on versions which I suspect are more compatible with the UFX versions. But they say that if you know Total Mix in any of its forms, you know it right across the board, but I'm still slightly mystified. I mean, as case in point, I thought I had it all sorted this evening for our recording session, which I do in the respect that I can hear myself, you can hear me, but unfortunately we can't hear any of the interstitials that I'm firing away, so I failed miserably.
No, you'll have to stitch it together in the studio later.
But I really have got to get on top of this. As I say, I've been really negligent in respect to sitting down and really working through this particular product, and I should know this thing backwards. I've had it long enough, and I've got to hang my head in shame. I've got no excuses.
It's not an easy piece of kit, is it, RME? Because it's like the professionals, the top of the range, kind of like big studios, kind of like a brand.
But at least it's not Antelope.
Yeah.
Yes. Although I did, I don't know if you recall, guys, I did mention that I found a section under function, and you hit it, and there is a virtual matrix. And I went, oh, no.
Please, no.
Please, no. How does this work?
Was there Keanu Reeves at the end of the cable? Like,
anyone that's familiar with my frustration with the Antelope Goliath that we have occasions to deal with when we're doing monitor demos in the store would know that,
to be fair to it, we haven't had an argument, the Goliath and I, for maybe a year now.
Oh, because you know it, or
maybe I'm just not trying to do anything complicated with it yet.
Well, I just want it to work when I switch it on.
Sometimes it does.
I just had an experience just this last Tuesday with a customer, and went in there to do a demo, and could I get it to work? And it just decided it worked the day before, and it didn't work. And
it's
no one
quite
had touched it.
You have to open the Antelope launcher, which then lets you open the Goliath control panel. And why doesn't that just automatically?
Also, it has got a habit of just not working, and you have to sort of. And I even phoned one of our colleagues who's very au fait with it, and he was talking me through the, you know, how to sort of connect the virtual matrix, and I did everything that I was bid to do, and it still refused to cooperate.
Yeah, it's weird because you can connect that via Thunderbolt or USB, and half the time neither of them work anyway. It's
yes.
A bit odd. Oh, well.
Well, I mean, give me just a good old analog desk, please. I know what's going on. I can work out. Some, as I say, these virtual desks are great. The phenomenal pieces of kit, but I do find them. I mean, and that's more of a lacking in my side of things. So really, as I say, with my Total Mix, I'm really going to have to sort of get real deep. I'm determined now to really pick it apart and figure out exactly how the routing works, especially in the context of doing these remote
get an Apollo, mate. Get an Apollo, an 8P or something like that.
Well, I'm a PC user, so Apollos don't really
still work. Yeah, they do.
I know, but I'm so heavily invested in RME.
You do believe them.
I mean, as a piece of quality equipment, they're phenomenal. The actual quality of the electronics and everything, I've just got to get my head around the virtual routing and figure out. I mean, I've got it back to, because it wasn't really cooperating in the studio, because I was, for whatever reason, I was having fun and games having multiple synthesizers and various other pieces of equipment running through it at the same time. I could only get the primary analogs to work on the master bus, and I've now got that working, but now I've lost the ability to actually have Zoom listen to multiple channels simultaneously, which I had managed to do last week. And now all that Zoom is doing is listening to one mic channel for whatever.
One day we will get there. One day.
Yes, yes.
while I was working hard today, obviously at our music shop, I was talking to customers and definitely not scrolling through my favorite news website, synthanatomy.com. I did notice the one very light news article that we have today. A little bit of a leak from our friends at Novation. If you know the Base Station 2, that was kind of a bit of a collaboration with Aphex Twin. It looks like they're brewing up something again, because there have been posters and billboards in LA, Berlin, Bristol, and London recently with the Aphex Twin logo and some red circles and what looks kind of like a schematic-y type thing of some sort of product in the background. And people have done the digging, as people on the internet tend to do. It's kind of distorted, so you can't quite tell what's going on. But on the Synth Anatomy page, they've found, they've sort of labelled some of the parts that are recognisable. We've got potentially an arpeggiator sequencer, patch memories, effects, an Aphex mode button, and some various other things. Either way, it's looking kind of groove boxy potentially. Obviously, Aphex Twin collaboration, so it's potentially going to be slightly weird in some way. But yeah, we've got a little bit of a brewing over there, so we'll keep an eye. Do actually quite enjoy the weirdness with the Korg Monologue Aphex Twin kind of collaboration. There's some really fun presets that they cooked up together. So we'll keep an eye out for it, see what we get.
Yeah, well, I mean, the original Base Station 2, it's absolutely a classic piece of kit, isn't it? So many people used it. I'm actually quite excited to see what's going to happen here, because if there are some presets, because it looks like there should be like a little screen going on. So I don't know. Maybe that means presets. Maybe it doesn't. It could be interesting. And sorry, go ahead, mate. I've just you were going
to
say something.
No, I was going to say something very silly. I'd love to know what an Aphex button does.
it could be. Well, what the stuff on the Korg Monologue that when the Aphex Twin collaboration happened, it was a lot of microtuning things, so microtonal scales and weird scale mappings you could use, as well as some sort of acid-y, distorted-type presets. So it could be a press this button to go weird tuning and distorted at the same time. But, I mean, that would be just redoing what they've already done. So,
Do you mind if I quickly just read one of the paragraphs? Because I was looking at the Synth Anatomy page, Ben, as you kindly mentioned. So here it says, one thing that can be ruled out, Novation will not release a new album with Aphex Twin. Both have already worked together in the past and equipped the beloved Base Station 2 analog synthesizer with the AFX mode, with which you can play a different sound per key. Totally crazy, but also super exciting.
So, end quote. No more music from the two, but hardware,
exciting,
at least.
So when's this due to come out, this new mysterious thing?
October the 20th, apparently.
It's next week, isn't it? End of next week?
Yeah, something like that. And speaking of sort of the end of next week-ish, in the UK, we are poised potentially on the precipice of Lockdown 2.0. We did have an episode a good while ago about what we think's going to happen, the future of the music industry, and all this kind of stuff. Speaking of the end of next week, I mentioned a few episodes ago that I do have tickets to a live thing. It's going to be a Void Null live audiovisual show. Will I get to see them? That's the question.
How are they planning on doing it? Was it going to be, you know, we've seen pictures of nightclubs in Europe where you have to sit in a sort of 2 meter square pen on the dance floor, and it works.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I'm not a scientist.
This is a seated, distanced audience, So limited tickets. They ran out of ones and twos very quickly, so I bought four tickets for myself. That's all I've got. I mean, the venue is also where the Modular Cafe happens. And speaking with them, we did have sort of our usual venue booked for the 31st. So we're going to have a bit of a Halloween bash. That was the plan way back when, before there was a pandemic. But they've just said, bye. Which, I mean, it's fair enough. The only reason it worked so well for us, because it was at the same time as a comedy night in the West End Centre. So our takings were just kind of bonus. It's because they didn't have anything else going on in the hall at that time. They didn't need any extra staff. It just kind of worked out. Looks like, assuming the pandemic clears up at some point in the future and the ModCaf can continue in the way that it used to, we may need to find a new venue or location, somebody that's happy to have us. But in the wider world of the arts, what do we reckon, chaps? How are we gonna, how are we looking?
Even if you talk about that particular venue, you've got to wonder, I mean, initially when we had our conversation at the beginning of the year, we sort of mulled over what the outcome was going to be for artists in general, some of our colleagues who actually play in function bands and...
Yeah, the jobbing musicians or live that bands, we know.
And how that would all be terminated or be curtailed for the interim period. But it looks like it's sort of going off indefinitely, so I'm starting to wonder about the future of these actual venues, whether they'll survive.
Yeah, I'm most worried about the little venues, really.
I got a friend of mine, he's doing he's playing in a band at a wedding for is it 15 people? 1-5?
Yeah, 15 is what we can have now.
Yeah, which is almost as much people as there are in the band.
So is that a wedding?
Yeah, that's a real wedding. Someone's actually getting married.
Okay, do you know that 15 has to include any extra, any superfluous people like DJs and band
staff
members
and everything?
Priests.
Apart the 15.
I did not, but that's what he told me. So I don't know. Maybe it's going to get cancelled.
Maybe it's a very small wedding.
Maybe.
Yeah, just two people, bride and groom.
Bridegroom, parents, and a big band.
And a big. How many people? How many people are in the band?
Well, it's just your regular kind of like wedding band with a guitar, bass, drums, keys, and vocals.
Which was that five piece?
That's five piece, yeah.
Well, as not a big fan of weddings in general, that does seem ideal. You know, minimal exposure to attention and just some good tunes. That's pretty good.
I think it's great. I think it's great. I mean, I haven't talked to him since he told me that, but yeah.
I was listening to one of these talk radio stations, and they were having people phone in, and that's exactly what they were talking about in the respect of per head allowance that you are allowed for those type of events did include. It's I mean, the staff on for the venue aren't included, but any third parties that are hired in as like photographers, bands, DJs, right, anything like that are counted as a part of your head count. So that starts limiting who you can have at the wedding.
Isn't that crazy? Isn't that like absolutely just taking the only mean that you can make, the only way that you have of making money as a musician? You know, like so many people rely on these gigs. So many people. How you So we've talked about this maybe about, 6 months ago? We kind of like anticipated this whole thing kind of happen. It was in February or March. And here we are in October. What has changed?
Well, nothing. All we've done with the lockdown one, if you want to call it that, is that we just delayed everything. Now,
There was a dip, and we appear to be back at square one now, more or less anyway. Not quite
in some respect,
not quite R equals three, but on the way to it.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's got a good appreciation of what a lockdown, certainly a total lockdown, entails, and everyone's got a good appreciation. I think people have got a better appreciation of what this pandemic's about. We've all had a nasty taste of it for the last 6 months, or even 8 months, I would want to say. But it's just the ongoing forward. I mean, we're at a point where there doesn't seem to be any predictable end to this. And it's the impact that's going to have on the long term now.
Yeah. Well, what I think for me personally, to quote Dr. Colin Riley, it's I genuinely think that what he said is all we have to do as composers is just keep on composing. If you are some sort of songwriter or you have a craft, you play the bongos, you know, really well. You're great, sort of like producer. Just keep on working. That's the only thing that you can do right now. If you have the means to eat, then keep on working on your stuff at home, because there will be opportunities for you, not necessarily live right now, but there may be. We don't know the future. And there's also obviously the internet. I think this is the only escape that we have as entrepreneurs. So this was literally the turning point for musicians and composers and songwriters and producers to really engage fully online. There's no other way. There's no turning back.
Yeah, I would certainly agree to that to the greater degree. The thing is, even when we get back to some semblance of normality, I just fear now that the venues aren't going to be there. But we certainly know what's happening in the UK in respect to the pub or licensing trade. That is been decimated, and a lot of venues are actually in pubs. In fact, there's been I would say in the last few years, last 10 years, maybe 15 years, there's been quite a nice resurgence of small venues in pubs and bars and so forth. And if what seems to be playing out, that sector of the economy has been absolutely decimated. I know that there's been attempts or there have been several schemes by the government to try and support it, but I've just heard so many stories that the nature of musicians and the way they work, it tends to find them falling between the cracks, and they're not applicable to any kind of support or anything like that. And then I know there's a lot of cries in the media, or certainly from the arts side of things, saying that if something isn't done shortly, it's going to be terminal and it's going to be too late.
Yeah, it's definitely, obviously the concern is for the artists, and, you know, can we continue to support ourselves? I mean, for me, I work full time. I would love to be a full time musician, but unfortunately I have a mortgage. So I work full time as it is in a different industry to music, but not every artist is in that position, and not every artist can be in that position. And certainly some people would have been, especially your sort of jobbing cover musicians, they would have been doing that as part of a full-time working week, maybe only working part-time in some other industry. But the venues, absolutely. I mean, tell me, where we played with Pegypt, Birdsworth and Pegypt, we've crossed over on a few gigs, but both bands, we've spent the last couple of years going up and down the country and playing little pubs, venues, clubs, all those tucked away little things that are so crucial to bands like us cutting our teeth and getting the gigging experience.
Absolutely.
You know, working out what songs work in a live context, you know, developing our live skills, and, you know, big or small, those venues are a part of what creates an artist, I think. And I do worry that some of those are going to go, just thinking about some of the places that even we've played last couple of years. It's not.
Yeah.
I worry that they won't be there when a vaccine does bring, if it brings the end of coronavirus. I certainly think society, by and large, will have to change. You know, in the same way, like, so I was listening to a podcast where they were talking about how AIDS changed the way hospitals worked forever. And now procedures that we think of as standard were totally unheard of before, you know, the 80s and 90s. And I think Corona will certainly, COVID-19 will certainly do that to a large amount of the public sphere and certainly the hospital sphere. But I do hope, I am an optimist. I do hope and I do think that maybe with significant time and uptake of a vaccine, should it work, and whether or not it has to be taken every year like a flu jab or not is another matter, but we might get back to some normality. But when that will be, who knows, and will the venue survive that time? That's the question I think we're all going to have to wait and see.
We don't know.
I think at least we're in a fortunate position in the modern world where because the home studio thing has been established for such a long time, at least in one extent, self-published musicians, kind of everywhere, we're still going to be able to listen to, create, share, and kind of consume music at home personally. It's just it's just going to have to be the hobbyists that are going to be the ones that can still do that. People that were, like yourself, Luke, completely in a separate industry for the 9 to 5, but having music still as that passion project, I think that's still going to keep ticking over, and I suppose we'll come to the forefront a little bit more. But yeah, in sort of out and about in the world, gigs are just going to be gone for, yeah, who knows how long.
It's not the fact that even when we get to relative normality, it's gone away for such a period, the people have had to have gone away and done something else because they've got to survive, you know. And it's not just the venues we're talking about, the bar staff, the security, the, when you're on the larger venues, the riggers, the roadies, the all the ancillary bits and pieces that support live music or live entertainment in general, they will have had to look for gainful employment in some other field altogether to, you know, keep their head above water. And they're already talking about great swathes of particular industries, but certainly in the travel and entertainment industry, those, the government are suggesting that those people need to retrain. And there's a lot of talk about that type of thing. I mean, I know some of the things they've been saying are airline cabin crew becoming care workers, things like that.
Not everyone's dream job. It's not flying to Brazil every week, is it?
No, you know. So that's the sort of extreme that has been discussed. So I would imagine that's the same for, I mean, bar workers. There's got to be literally tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of people that work in bars. I mean, I know they're not always necessarily full time, but they're reliant. Or there's a lot of students. I mean. Students are certainly suffering, and we obviously hear all the tales about the students
lockdown back students to university. And universities as well. It's been happening all over the north of the country, really. Bristol.
Yeah,
Bistral sounds like some kind of sort of knockoff fuel brand.
The big problem there is that the students rely on the bar work and that type of work, or you know, waiting and restaurants and all that sort of thing, to actually sort of help fund their way through university.
Yeah, I do that age, definitely.
Yeah. I still do that. That's my case. It's a question of, I don't necessarily, if I was eating only pasta and beans, I probably wouldn't have to work, but I want to be able to eat decent food. If you know what I mean, it's some sort of an analogy for, I want to be able to go to places. I want to be able to, you know, to afford to buy a new keyboard if I can. And that, and fortunately, having a job really helps me with that. But as most students that I know, they're not very fussed, because we're all in a situation where we are still connecting because we are part of a community. Now, it's not as broadened as we wished, but as music students, we're actually like closer than before, at least than last year. I feel like we have created this sort of bond, and we know that we only rely on each other to actually get stuff done. That's not going to be obviously through gigs, but there is loads of interesting plans, at least for me and some of my colleagues. We're going to record some videos with me as a band leader, with some of them doing other stuff, and I'm going to help them. There's going to be opportunities to exchange producing skills, engineering skills. Fortunately, I am very blessed to say that my learning and my experience has been affected, but not totally affected by that.
I think going back to Ben's point about the hobbyist or the enthusiast, I think that certainly will keep feeding the demand for hardware. And as we all know, I mean, the majority of our customers, in the respect of purchasing hardware and software, are the hobbyists. They're the they're the demographic that keeps the whole thing going. Because if the sort of hardware retailers had to rely solely on professional jobbing musicians, there wouldn't be a lot of hardware sales at all. So I think that will continue, and and it may inspire with people sort of forced to spend a lot more time alone or in sort of not in social environments, maybe there will be a flowering of creativity from bursting forth from people's bedrooms all over the country.
Well, yeah, with the amount of new piano players we have, maybe the longer it goes on, the more we're actually going to get some really serious piano players soon.
Yeah.
Yes.
But then you put them all in the same room to play together, and that's a mess. because they can't play. They can't play in a band. You see, that's the other thing.
That is a skill, because I mean, I haven't played in a group situation.
It is a skill.
A long time. I'm not going to say how long. I mean, but a very long time. But it's a skill to play with other musicians.
I don't want to say any names, but I've had a jam session recently, and it was at university, and it was like all of these, you know, kids and musicians just like getting together in one room, and everyone was being so eager to play, and so there was no musicality. That it was just a mess. You know, it's like when you're doing a recipe and you go like, basil, cumin, all the spices into the same pot. You know, like, you don't want that. You want a nice balanced recipe.
And it tastes like soap.
Exactly, and then tastes like soap. You know, like, it is a skill, and it's quite an important skill if you want to be a performer, is work on your musician skills, absolutely.
You definitely see that with a band that have been playing together for a considerable amount of time, that they have this kind of unspoken language, and they can just sort of cue each other in with just this sort of a wink or a nod, and they just have a kind of, there's a flow, isn't there, between all the members, and that makes for some of the really, really polished performances when they have that kind of level of skill, not just their own personal technique, but that sort of group technique.
Yeah, my favourite gigs that I've been to have been sort of three pieces that have just been just going at it for ages, and they really know their stuff.
Yeah, the sort of perfect synergy of all the,
It's about musical conduct as well. Sorry to interrupt you again. It's about having musical respect by your dear colleague, and it's about listening more than actually playing. You know, it's musical conduct, and Luke knows that because he's in a brilliant band. So he's.
I'll stop
it.
Musical manners.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Well, the only reason I have any manners is because, if you don't know, Birdsworth is actually five drummers.
Oh, is it actually?
Really?
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So, everybody in Birdsworth can play drums, and in fact, Eddie is a sick drum producer and programmer as well. So it makes my life quite easy, because I'll go, "What do you think of this chorus part?" And someone will just jump on and play an idea, and you know, that's really quite handy.
But how do you, out of the five or how many there are of you, how did you manage to score the drums, so to speak?
Because I'm the only one that can't play anything else.
Okay.
I don't believe you.
No, it's true. I've over the course of lockdown, I've learned how to play Clocks, Speed of Sound, and Bittersweet Symphony on piano, as well as some Pachelbel, Canon D. That's about it.
That's better than me. Great, All I've got is my one demo song for people in the shop, which is Strobe by Deadmau5. That's the only thing I play.
Oh, actually, and I should say, yeah, I did learn, I think I learned Everything in Its Right Place by Radiohead, but just because James, that's his demo song.
Oh, yeah. I don't actually know the Radiohead song, but I know that one piano bit because of James.
Yeah.
Nice one. Well, we'll see how this second lockdown, when it arrives, how it plays out. And one day we can all go to a gig together.
Oh,
maybe.
And we should comment on that when that happens.
So, what's the story with the Voight Knoll gig? Is it on? Is it off? Who knows? Is it?
as far as I'm aware, it's on. I'm going to turn up on the 17th, and we'll see what happens.
17th of October.
Yes, yeah, so it's not long. We'll see.
I think you've got a reasonable chance of them slipping it in, because I think by the end of October, what's going to happen is going to happen.
Yeah, I do want to see it. Anyway, from lockdown lamentations to the strange and uncharted territories, I think, of Luke's Spacey Bit. Take it away, Luke.
Okay, so I have a game for you all to play.
Yes, interactivity. Okay, I've got the pic. Do we need the pictures from our WhatsApp chat?
You do need the pictures from your WhatsApp chat. Now, listeners, obviously you won't be in the Rack Addicts group WhatsApp group.
Well, they wish they were.
Fair enough. I mean, it would be more lively, I suppose. But at the same time, you too can participate in this little game we're going to play. If you pause the podcast now, and I really do hope you do, quickly Google a picture called the Hubble Deep Field. Do that now. Press play. Okay, so assuming you've done that, you're now looking at the Hubble Deep Field picture.
That's the first one in our chat, is it, Luke?
Indeed.
Cool.
It's the one with all the stars.
Thank you.
Now, when I was, maybe 16 or something, I was shown this picture in a class at school or something, and when I found out what it was, it totally blew my mind and it made me very interested in space, and it's part of what we're going to talk about this week.
And that is why Luke Spacey Bit is coming now to your ears through the internet.
Indeed. Well, yes, because without space and all that stuff, we wouldn't have the internet and so on. Now, this picture is taken by the Hubble Deep Space Telescope, which on one particular occasion in 1995, they pointed at a blank patch of the night sky just left of the moon in the telescope's field of view. It's equivalent roughly to, well, they say it is 2.6 arc minutes, which is how you measure length in telescope speak. But effectively, if you had a drinking straw held in front of you about arm's length and you were to look at the diameter of the drinking straw compared to the rest of the world around you, that's how tiny this patch of blank space is compared to what Hubble can see. So they zoomed right in on that and they left it there for about 10 days, about 100 hours.
This is like the ultimate long exposure type photography.
Exactly. The ultimate long exposure photograph. And so when they first zoomed in, it was black apart from three little red stars. After 100 hours, after 10 days, what you see is loads of old infrared light coming into that previously uncharted, completely blacked out piece of space. And there are 10,000 points of light in that picture. Only three of them are stars that we can see from the Milky Way galaxy. Those are 10,000 galaxies that until 1995 we did not know existed.
Wait, these are 10,000 galaxies?
Galaxies. Whoa. That we couldn't see
what?
Until we left the Hubble pointed at that patch of space for 10 days.
This is insane.
And that that piece of space makes up 1/24 millionth of what Hubble could see. So of the night sky, if you like. So that gives you an idea of how much is out there that we didn't even know was there until we had an instrument capable of looking, right? So Hubble's getting on a bit. It's done a lot of good, cool things for us, especially that sort of stuff. But we've now come to the point where we need something bigger and more interesting, which is the James Webb Telescope, which has been in development for about 20 years. And the reason why we're talking about it is because it's finally completed some of its last and most important environmental tests, which means that it will be launched finally after about 20 years of development, massively over budget, massively behind, but you know, all for good reasons and all for a good cause. It will be launched on, I think it's the 20th of March. I didn't quite get the date right, but it'll be launched in March 2021 by a ESA Ariane rocket in South America. And that's going to be very exciting because this telescope will be able to do that all the time and will be able to look further. Effectively, the reason why this is interesting is because a telescope that looks like that, that can view infrared light from very far away, is looking not just in terms of distance, it's not looking very far away, it's also looking back in time,
of course,
if you like, because light travels at a certain speed. So the light in the Hubble picture that you see there is about 10 billion years old. So not only are you seeing galaxies that are very far away, you're seeing galaxies that are extremely young, or old, if you like. We're seeing them in their youthful state. If the universe is approximately 13.7 billion years old, then what are we going to see if we look beyond 10 billion years? Which is what James Webb will be able to do, which is very exciting.
Interesting. Is that the second picture? Is that what the telescope looks like?
That is, yes. So that's the second picture is a picture of the James Webb telescope. If you don't know what that is, give it a Google. It's so cool. It looks like something out of Evangelion. It's really creepy.
With my very limited understanding of anything telescope related, that doesn't look like a telescope, mate. What?
Indeed. So the big silver bit is a sun shield, okay, which will help the telescope stay very cold. The idea is we're going to send it out to Lagrange Point 2, which is a stable point in the solar system between the it's an orbit point just beyond Earth, about four times the distance between the Earth and the Moon. It's about four times that far away from the Earth. And rather than orbit the Earth, because that would be pointless, the James Webb Telescope is going to orbit the Sun with the Earth, in between the Sun and the Earth at the same time, if you like. It will stay at a fixed point in space relative to the Earth, but continue around the Sun. So it will essentially always have the Earth and the Moon in between it and the Sun as it journeys around the Sun in a sort of fixed orbit, which is going to be very interesting.
Yeah, I'm pointing out, though, not towards
exactly,
the Sun.
Yes. So that big old shield is going to keep it nice and cold, while the massive orange gold dish is going to be kept in the dark and the cold, so it can point out into space completely uninterrupted.
Nice.
It will see things that we've never seen before, and it will possibly be able to see back in time, if you like, to about 100 million years after the Big Bang occurred, as far as we think.
That's pretty short in the cosmological time frame, isn't it?
Yes. Nice. Exactly. Which is the reason why it's so important is because we know a lot about what we think should have happened around then, but this is going to give us some images, just like Hubble did in 95.
Pretty damn cool.
Well, and obviously, if we know the past, we will be able to understand the future.
That's the idea.
Because time... is an iced donut or something. I don't know.
This is super exciting news, I'll tell you that. I just wanted to say, I've seen in the news, I don't know if you're familiar with this or whatever, but something about we found 25 other planets better than Earth in the universe with better conditions than Earth. Is this true?
Yeah, so is it Spitzer, I think, is the other
I have no
massive...
idea.
So it looks a bit like Hubble. It looks a bit like one of the other radio telescopes out there. But Spitzer is a transiting telescope that looks for exoplanets and orders. I can't remember. There's one very famous telescope. I think it's Spitzer, but basically has been the reason why we've now seen about 4,000 exoplanets where we didn't really have that level of detail before. And a good chunk of those could well be lovely to live on, and a good chunk of them won't be. And again, if James Webb looking back in time or into the future isn't exciting enough for you, it will also have a very powerful camera that can further investigate those exoplanets and, you know, maybe even see past the atmosphere and look not quite onto the ground, but essentially onto the ground of those planets.
Amazing.
Which is, that's crazy to me. It's the dual telescope, so it will be able to look at those 25 interesting planets and go, oh look, there's grass.
Super cool. Well, you've definitely got to let us know when the first images come back.
It will be a while, but it's going to take months for them to get it set up, even when it is out there at Lagrange 2. So we'll see how that goes.
Well, there we go. That's our first goal. Official goal for Rack Addicts After Hours. We've got to still be going by the time that we get some images from that telescope. Well, I'm sure you'll love to be here, because I'd love to have you around as well if you want to keep doing this old podcast with Pete and I.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Excellent. Should, and that goes for you too, listeners. Don't go away anywhere. Well, any other business, gentlemen?
Is it time for...
I think it's time. And I totally forgot that we did this after having done 43 episodes and 44 episodes now. I'm so unprepared. Well, we're going to give you what is probably going to stop being our YouTube recommendations eventually, but our general internet accessible multimedia thing. Yeah, go and check out some stuff that we found on the internet this week. Pete, I have actually been watching Ghost Town Living channel.
Yeah.
That's super cool. I'm enjoying that series.
How far did you get it? How far have you got into it?
I've got to the episode after the tragedy. What was that, episode 3?
It's pretty tragic, isn't it?
Yeah. Still good watching, though.
I just find it amusing. I don't know why. Referred to as the tragedy.
the great tragedy. It's a super cool series, though. And there's a lot of helpful feedback and advice from people in the comments. Obviously, I'm still kind of behind. But that's pretty cool. I'm going to recommend a website that I think you might enjoy, Luke. This will occupy roughly 2 seconds of your day. Actually, maybe a bit longer, because it does take quite a long time for you to type out the URL. So this is a website that's very informative and cheers me up every time I look at it. So you will type into your browser of choice. I myself am a Google Chrome man. www.hasthelargehadronconnider.com Okay, Telmo enjoys it.
It's great.
Oh, I think I spelt it wrong.
I think I did as well, because I can get it. Has the Large Hadron Collider destroyed, that's why I got it wrong, destroyed theworldyet.com. And I'm not going to, no spoilers. Listeners, go and check out Has the Large Hadron Collider destroyed theworldyet.com. Few seconds of your time, excellent internet entertainment, good clean fun for all the family. Who's next?
This is literally how far my knowledge in the space goes, basically. This is it. Just this website.
A fun little one.
Oh, boy.
Take me back to 2012.
I guess, yes. I can go next. And I've got two YouTube recommendations.
Had some episodes off, so you've still got YouTube recommendations left. We're all running out of subscriptions. Well, Pete's not. He's got the infinite subscription feed.
Oh, Pete's in another level. First, there's a BBC documentary on YouTube that I found quite interesting. It's mostly because I've been doing some late 70s punk history research, which is related to one of my modules, the resurgence of punk, the Sex Pistols, DIY myth, kind of the Slits, that sort of stuff. So this is a very interesting one. It's a BBC doc. If you just go BBC documentary, The Sliths, and if you're into punk and if you're into British pop culture, pop history in general, it's a really interesting insight about punk. And it looks at punk from a different corner, you see, because it's not necessarily about the bands that we used to be talking about, but from the Slits' point of view, which is an all-female band that really created a lot of chaos, but they were actually quite sophisticated, a lot more than
sophisticated and punk are not two words I normally have in the same sentence, not going to lie.
Oh, you'd be surprised.
Yeah, you would. So yeah, I totally recommend you to have a look at that if you have got 13 minutes of your just your time, and just have a little look at that, and I think you're gonna burst with pop culture knowledge. My other recommendation comes from CNN. I know, right? CNN. So it's not even the not the channel, but it's basically if you just type 30 seconds of calm, you will come up with a series of videos that especially CNN started, and it's basically within the middle of their news bulletins they've presented, which I totally understand that especially American politics can be quite intrusive in someone's head. These 30 seconds of calm can really help you to kind of just relax, just kind of like just take a deep breath kind of thing. It's kind of like a mini meditation that an open broadcast TV is doing. And actually, the music is quite interesting in that. So it's you guys, especially you, Pete and Ben, you guys are going to enjoy it because it's very interesting, like synthy pads, very interesting reverby sounds,
ambient boy time.
Yeah, just ambient music. I did a piece in the style of this, so you can find it on my YouTube channel as well. But this is really just about taking 30 seconds of your day.
Remember, it's Telmo Terremoto music.
That's right. just about taking 30 seconds and just take a deep breath and just relax, and everything will be okay if you're suffering from any sort of anxiety or whatever. But anyway,
great for when you've overdosed on the news at the moment.
That's right. And I'll leave you to whoever's next. Pete.
Right, I have delved into the depths of my subscription as be my habit of...
Have you caught sight of the bottom of the list yet?
No.
Not even close.
No. Right, this one is great for anyone who likes a bit of sci-fi and Nazis.
Okay.
Ooh. Both or separate?
No, but together.
Oh, together.
Sort of as a
yeah,
sort of,
I'll take it.
A, sort of slight mix. So This channel is called Burning Ideas. It's not got, there's only a few videos on it, but it is certainly worth a watch. So it could be described as the show reel, or as it's described as the production banner for a creator, director and producer called Michael Chance. And it features a couple of videos or a couple of films that he's produced, they're sort of independent films. And there is a video on the making of the one of them, which is, so the actual primary film that he made, and this is going back, I think it looks like production started 10 years ago, and they did a couple of kind of trailers, and I don't know if they were looking for funds or whether they crowdfunded these. But the actual completed video, which is actually 21 minutes and 34 seconds long, so it's not a full feature film, but it certainly gets your appetite going, and it's called Project Arbiter, which is the actual film, and it's a sort of looks like initially a classic sort of Second World War kind of adventure type thing, but they kind of, there's a kind of touch of sci-fi. It's got a sort of whiff of the Castle Wolfenstein about it.
Oh, cool.
Uh-huh. Oh, that tickles my fancy.
When you say Project Arbiter, I'm immediately thinking Keith David and Halo.
Okay, fair enough. No, it's just the title they've decided for it, and I won't give any spoilers, but it's worth a watch. So Burning Ideas, two separate words, Burning Ideas.
Nice one. Up to you, Luke. Bring us home.
Well, as I was talking about it earlier for my weekly update, I thought it would only be right to share the video that got me up to speed on the controversy, and as the video calls it, as the video is titled, the engoodening of No Man's Sky.
I love it.
It's by a brilliant chap called Internet Historian. He's done other such brilliant videos.
The great and goodening. Sorry, I love that so much.
Yeah, it's just, if you like your internet humor steeped in irony, sarcasm, memes, and just, you know, that fantastic, like, Reddit, Twitter sphere humor that, you know, that isn't the unpleasant side of those websites, but still, it's a really, really fantastic thing. It's got that sort of same vibe as some of that Bill Wirtz stuff with the
excellent,
not so much the jazzy or vocalization side of it, but certainly the impromptu and self-referential type side of it, which is quite cool. He's done other funny videos criticizing other games, such as The Fall of 76, which I'm sure you can guess what that is about, and just many other topics, not always video games, but they're just absolutely hilarious and informative in a bizarre, and, you know, take it with a pinch of salt, but it's still quite funny and in some ways true style that I thoroughly enjoy. And he's just also got a very deep and rich voice as well, which is helpful. The Internet Historian.
Nice one. The Internet Historian, always nice to have an excellent vocal tone on those as well. Well, that brings us to the end of episode 44. As always, we appreciate your listenership. We can see those numbers, or Pete can see those numbers, so we know you're out there. We have our consistent friends out there in the wide world. Thank you very much, and please do tune in again sometime next week for Rack Addicts After Hours, episode 45. Until then, stay safe out in the weird wide world. We've been Pete, Ben, Telmo, and Luke, and we'll see you later.